is your inspirational quote?
We're all fat. So eat more bread.
On this episode of The Commercial Break.
I wrote him. I said, please, I'm a podcaster. Do you understand? I work for free. I'm doing boner pill host reads, just trying to make a living. They don't pay very good. And I have to use them in order to get a personal experience. Oh, it's a miserable life I live.
The next episode of The Commercial Break starts now.
Welcome back to The Commercial Break. I'm Brian Green. This is my dear friend and beautiful co-host of The Commercial Break, Kristen Joy Hoadley. Best to you, Kristen.
Best to you, Brian.
And best to you out there in the podcast universe. Netflix, take note. I just want to say this out loud. Netflix, take note. And I think every person who has it was on Netflix as a joke this year is swinging by The Commercial Break for a little how you do.
That's right.
Yes. Feels like we're the... You heard it here last. I think Netflix has an order, you know? You know what I'm saying? Like, Conan. Yeah, get him on there. Stern. Maybe Stern will do a two-hour-long interview with him. What about Jimmy Kimmel? Sure, put him on Kimmel. And then they go down the list. And then they're like, the commercial break? I guess. I mean... If we fucking have to, I guess we'll throw them there. And we're blessed to have them. Don't make a mistake. I'm super blessed.
Oh, I know.
But I'm just noticing a little pattern that's going on. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to be a part of it. But I want them to take note. Because next time Netflix is a joke comes around in 2025, I think it just would be appropriate if they would just send us to some of these places where Netflix is a joke is happening, mm-hmm. and let us do the interviews live there where they're actually doing a set or whatever it happens to be. Netflix is a joke.
This is a great idea.
Yeah, some of them are recorded for Netflix, and then others are just shows sponsored by Netflix. And then I guess some people are doing, you know, specials during that Netflix is a joke thing. It feels like Netflix is a joke lasts all year, doesn't it? Isn't that?
Yes.
I don't know. We'll get the lowdown. And Reed, where's the dinner invitation? I'm serious. Mr. Hastings. I should be respectful. Mr. Hastings, if you don't mind, where's the dinner invitation? The private plane, the limousines, Tom Papa's bread. Yeah, Tom Papa's bread. Tom hasn't sent us any bread. And I'm going to ask him because this is a TCB infomercial day and Mr. Tom Papa's going to be joining us.
I know. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Either. I love him so much.
He is great. I think the first time I saw him must have been Letterman. Don't you think? Don't you think it was like way back in Letterman or something like that?
Yeah, I've seen quite a few of his specials and I just love his brand of humor.
He feels like, I don't want to say this pejoratively, like negatively, but, and I'm not even sure those two words mean the same thing, but they sound fancy, so I'll say them. I feel like Tom is like your best friend, like the dad of comedian. Like he's really level-headed and very calm, cool, collected. And all of the comedians that I have seen him with, and I do listen to his podcast, all of the comedians that come or stars that come to his show, they all seem to be so reverent of Tom. You know, he's not like, he doesn't get a lot of ball busting. He's just like he's like the guy that everybody wants to go have a conversation with. The exact opposite of the commercial break. So it makes sense that he's on the show
right.
today. Yeah. But
we'll ask him about that.
I do love me some Tom
Papa. He's like the papa of comedy.
He is like the papa of comedy. Speaking of papas, I do have to tell you just like a little side note, a little funny conversation that happened between me and one of my children the other day. I said, hey, kids, what's going on at school? You know, I like to check in with them once or twice.
Of course. How was your day at school?
Yeah, once or twice a year, I like to check in with them, make sure they're doing okay. How was your year at school? How's your last year of high school going? Good? Yeah. No, I'll probably make it to the graduation ceremony if I don't have an interview from someone with Netflix as a joke. One of my kids said, yeah, it's going great. Today we're learning about things that are alive and not alive. So they're very young. All my children are very young. All 22 of them are very young. They're all under the age of five. Figure that out. It's a good Irish Catholic family. Irish Catholic Venezuelan family we got going on here. Some of them don't look much like me, but I'm not going to complain. I like them, so I'm not going to complain. So, and I like my wife. He goes.
They're tax write-offs.
Yeah. He goes, yeah. I said, wow, things that are alive and not alive. Give me an example.
He says, well, that ball over there is not alive, but my sister is alive. And I go, oh, that's right. Good. Give me another example. He says, the table is not alive, but the dog, Blue, is alive. And I said, oh, that's really good. Listen. And I go, oh, that's really good. So Blue is alive and the table's not alive. And he goes, yeah, but Daddy, I think I've heard you say that Blue's not going to be alive for very long. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, sometimes you say, I wish you were dead.
Oh, great.
And I was like, oh, no, he's been listening into the commercial break door. Because I really don't talk like that in front of my children.
No,
I just throw the dog in another room and go fuck yourself. And I was like, oh, this is it. These kids pick up on everything.
They do. They always do. Way dear more than
nephews.
You think.
Yeah. Dear little nephews pick up on everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Luca is very smart and remembers to the memory.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I know.
They're like little cages. It's like they throw them in there and it's like jail. It's like solitary confinement. Their brains are filled with none of the concerns that
right.
we have. Money. Children, mm-hmm. right? Time, energy, effort. We got to go here. We got to go there. I got to get insurance. Whatever the deal is, they're not filled with all of this junk that our heads filled. Who's going to be
right.
the next president?
You know, it's everything's not, new.
Everything's new. So when they pick up on something, it literally goes into solitary confinement mm-hmm. to be let out in the most inappropriate of ways. So we have larger members of our family, and I don't think she would mind sharing. Grandma Kiki, Vicky, my mom, is a larger lady. She shared that on the show before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was watching My 600-Pound Life one time. And one of my kids said, why are they so big? Why is their belly so big? And I said, well, you know, it could be a number of things. Maybe they ate too much. Maybe they're sick. Maybe they, you know, whatever. I was kind of going through explanations that I felt wouldn't unnecessarily prejudice him into weird conversations that sounded judgmental, right? I was trying to be like as nice as I could about it.
Sure.
And so Grandma Kiki comes over one day and Grandma Kiki says, come here, you know, give me a hug, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, oh, I want to give you a hug on your big belly. And I was like, oh, don't say that. Don't say that. And this is like 2 months after we had this conversation about my 600-pound life. And so I pulled them aside and I said, hey, you can't say that. Like, you don't say that to people's faces. Like, it's really hurtful. And he was like, oh, okay. He didn't understand a word I was saying because he went right back to my mom. And he's like, are you sick? Do you eat too much candy or pizza? And I was like, oh, fucking motherfucker.
Here we go.
How do we teach these kids? How do we get them? And they're also at the age where they start saying things and you have no idea where they learned these mm-hmm. things. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
No idea where they learned them. And they start saying them to you. It's like on a television show or something. They start saying it, you know, like, get the heck out of here. The other day, one of my kids was like, get the heck out of here. And I was like, where did you learn that? Who says that to you? I was like, mommy says it behind your back all the time.
That's right.
Good old mommy. You can always count on her. All right, listen. Tom Papa, tompapa.com. He's got Netflix specials. He's on his fourth. He's got a podcast, Breaking Bread with Tom Papa, which is great. He's on Sirius XM, What a Joke, with Tom Papa and guests. I feel like in a lot of ways, our podcast journey has been similar. While I don't feel we're as funny as Tom Papa, nor do I think it was as famous as Tom Papa, but I feel like in a lot of ways, our podcast journey is similar. I'd like to talk to him about that.
That's right.
So many great things but Tom Papa has done, including some movies that are some of my favorites. Behind the Candelabra. He's also was in The Informant with Matt Damon, which is a brilliant fucking movie. And he stars alongside Matt Damon. I'd love to talk to him about that. And we'll get a chance to ask him about all of this stuff. You guys go to tompapa.com, check out his tour, check out his Netflix special, check out his new book, Sirius XM, all that good stuff. We'll put all the links and the pertinent details inside of the show notes so that you don't have to do too much Googling yourself, you lazy bastards. And then, you know, we'll ask him about his kids too. We'll ask if his kids have little mind traps also. What do you think?
I bet they do.
Okay, so Tom Papa with us after this. We'll be back.
I know you're already on your phone, so pull up Instagram and follow us at The Commercial Break, and then follow us on TikTok at TCB Podcast. Done? Perfect. Thank you. Since you're at the ready, why not text us hello at 212-433-3TCB? Or if you've got some drama in your life, a little fun story, or anything really, we're desperate for content. Call and leave us a message at 212-433-3TCB. And don't forget to check out tcbpodcast.com because that's got it all. Speaking of having it all, let's listen to our fabulous sponsors and get back to the commercial break.
And Tom Pappas here with us now. Tom, thank you so much. It's wonderful to have you on the show.
Hello, Tom.
Nice to see you. Thanks for having me. Thanks for wearing the same glasses that I have.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they're exactly the same, but I did have that pair of... How long have you been wearing glasses? That's a great question.
I've been wearing glasses for like 10 years.
For 10? I should have been wearing them since I was about 12 years old, but I took a break, and I think one time...
a break.
Yeah, a break, and then it made my eyes worse, so now I'll be wearing them forever and ever and infinity. Tom,
I know.
Before we get into the meat and potatoes of you being here on the show, Chrissy and I have a pressing question to ask you. Do you have a will? Are your legal affairs in order should you pass away?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
Nice.
Just wondering, because we're going through some family drama with wills and estates. And we had a long conversation about
PSA
it.
PSA for yeah, everybody
PSA
out
for
there.
Everybody. Get your affairs in order.
It is a very uncomfortable subject for sure.
Yeah.
You kind of like, you feel like, are we talking about this and putting the whammy on us at the same time? Then there's all of the who's going what to who.
Yeah.
And then we did it. We my wife and I drafted it. And I was literally thinking the other day, where is it?
Right.
Is there a copy? Like, they literally old school give you
the binder.
The hard copy. Yeah, the binder.
But yeah, big hard copy thing. It's like, this should be like a PDF. Like, why is...
Yeah, exactly.
There should be a keeper of the
why did you give that to me 10 years, like 20 years ago? And where is it? I don't know if my second child is on it.
Yeah.
Here's the other one, though. Is okay, you've got to do that like official thing. Okay, we know where everything's going and who's going to take care of the kids when they're little and blah, blah, blah. But there's all these other uncomfortable conversations you should be having, which I know my wife and I haven't had, which is okay, so if you die, what do you want us to do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to be scattered somewhere? Do you want to go back to New Jersey? Do you want to be what? Like, we haven't discussed that at all.
Oh, you got to have that conversation.
I know. Otherwise, you're just putting it on the other person. And, you know, when you're in a relationship for a long time, you love that person and you don't really support all their decisions.
Exactly.
Or any of them.
I can see my wife, like, I can see my wife coming up with a horrible idea. So I... do you have to write that down or can I just tell her?
You can just tell her that shit. You don't have to worry about like if you...
But what if she gets dementia then?
Oh, what if she does have dementia?
See, there's
though,
all these
or something
little
like
things.
That. There's all these little things.
Oh, yeah.
You might want to write that down. Or your poor
wife
could
about...
be walking around Los Angeles with your ashes going, where did he tell me?
A little here, a little there.
Yeah.
I don't... I thought about it, and I don't even know if I still have it, of having a folder on my laptop.
Yes.
Saying, you know, this is the final folder you should open.
Right.
And in there, you contain all of the uncomfortable things you don't want to talk about.
Yes. Here's where I keep all my secrets. My girlfriend gets paid $300 a month. Please send it here. The apartment is located.
Don't ask
here.
Questions. It's over.
Yeah.
I told my wife, whose name is Astrid, I said, Astrid. There, and I do have a folder on my laptop. It doesn't contain like all the morbid details, but it contains some of the more important details that she may not normally deal with. It has nothing to do with finances. She handles those because I'm terrible. But it says, you know, like in case of this podcast could possibly in the future at some point make actual money. So please protect it. And here's the people you contact who might be able to help you with that.
Wishful thinking.
Yeah, wishful thinking.
That's Brian. What
I should. I like the optimism. I like the optimism.
You've been in the podcast business. Here, Kirstie and I were doing a little comparison because we've noticed we've shared some guests and then we started to notice that there's a pattern. You, not necessarily a pattern, but you started your podcast very shortly after us, like a week or to after we
did. Oh, really?
Was this a pandemic project for you? Or you just felt like, let me do something? Because I felt like we started a week before lockdowns began to happen, and that allowed us to get a little bit more serious about it, because what the hell am I going to do otherwise?
Right.
I'm stuck in the house.
I know. And
they really be kept doing it.
Yeah, I also have this this Sirius XM show.
Yeah,
yeah,
and it's great.
We were in the studio, and then we shifted over and kept doing it from our home studios. And that thing was a lifeline. I mean, that we were doing that through such a weird part was great. So I know exactly what you're saying. But my podcast started, like, I had different iterations of it, and I was always kind of doing it, but kind of like never really focusing on it. It was just like something I did on the side. I went through periods where I'd have great guests and all these great interviews on what was Come to Papa. And then I had my buddy Paul, who used to open for me. He would be on it. And then it kind of morphed. And then about the timing that you're talking about, a week from you guys, I really started just dialing it in and really starting to enjoy it more, and kind of had a clear vision of, oh, no, I should really, like, focus on this and have fun with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I'm going to continue doing it, I should want to get to the mic and have some fun.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, and so that's when it kind of, like, when it kind of clicked in. It's funny, I have a hesitation of saying anything is a pandemic pursuit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like...
Because is it over now?
Yeah. It's like... Exactly. Yeah, like I bake bread all the time, and I started that, you know, a couple of years before the pandemic, and people are like, oh, yeah, because of the pandemic. I'm like, no. No, I actually do it and like it. And shut up.
I had three children, two of which during the pandemic, and someone's like, oh, pandemic babies? I'm like, no, I don't think that was a pandemic project. We were kind of knocking it. We were doing that long before the pandemic started. But while we're at it, I guess so. But then I can blame all their silliness on the pandemic. I'm like, oh, don't worry about them. They're a pandemic baby.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
When the teacher calls and is like,
they're not D students. They're pandemic babies.
The teacher calls and is like, your son tried to gouge somebody's eyes out today. He's a pandemic baby. You got to excuse him.
Yeah. 2020.
2020. The good old days. Right. I think for Chrissy and I, I think we had a kind of a something similar happen to us, in that it was just something fun to do at first. We said, well, if we're having fun doing it, then why not?
Yeah.
And then because 2020 hurt a lot of us financially, then we thought, well, maybe we could make this into a business. We're still waiting for that to happen, but
we're still trying.
The supply chain's back and inflation's down, but still trying to make money off these podcasts.
And that's the case with almost every podcaster, I'm sure of it. But then it's like, then you start to focus a little bit more on what actually is happening on the show. You give it some personality, and then the show takes on its own personality. And I think yours has it's a great premise. And then you have these, you know, comedians mainly, and I'm sure you've had others on too, but you have these comedians that come in, and you sit at this table, on the YouTube version at least, you sit at this table, it's got a checkered, red and white checkered table, like an Italian trattoria, and you've got a bottle of Chianti sitting there, and you break bread with them, and it's so cool. It's familiar to me. I worked at an Italian trattoria for a long time, and I look at that, and it brings back memories of the time that I was working at that trattoria with a bottle of Chianti on every table, every single table. You get so much reverence from your guests. You've been doing this for, I don't want to say so long because I don't want to date you, but I feel like I might have seen you first when you were on Letterman back in the day.
Yeah. And
do you feel, having done this so long, do you feel now so comfortable getting up on stage and doing a set, or do you still get some nerves around it? What's that feeling? That seven, what do they call it? The 7 foot walk? Is that what they call it? The 7 foot walk to the mic or something?
It depends on the situation. You know, I mean, I'm, of course, you know, 30 years in, I'm very comfortable there. I'm as comfortable there as I am other places.
Sure.
But it depends if it's a new situation. Like I just had to host this award show last Saturday night, and you're walking into an environment where they aren't there to see me. They may not like comedy. They may not stop talking. It could go horribly wrong.
Yeah.
So that day is ruined. Leaning up to that,
how'd it go?
Yeah, and it went great. They were awesome. They were all paying attention, and I got to kill right off the top. And then it was just I was a hit for the rest of the night,
nice.
Which is not how an award show a month earlier went.
No.
You just talked the whole time.
Yeah.
Did not care. You were like a substitute teacher. And it's just a nightmare. So anyway, if it's an unknown situation, if there's factors that are out of my control, of course, the nerves will be there a little more.
Yeah,
but if I'm in a theater just doing my thing, you're not nervous. You're heightened, of course. You're about to walk in front of 1,000 people and you're the only one who's supposed to be talking.
Yeah, so they paid good money to see you. You don't want to ruin their night. Yeah.
Yeah, so you're definitely heightened, but not nervous. You know, back to the way you were describing my podcast with the table and the checkered thing, I had somebody contact me online and say that it's not pronounced trattoria, it's trattoria.
Trattoria. Oh, really? Were you saying trattoria for a while, too?
She was kind of like attacking me, like, you're from New Jersey and you're Italian, and how dare you call it a trattoria? It's a trattoria.
Oh, wow.
It's like, well, that's aggressive, and I'm not really sure you're right.
I don't think so. I had a real Italian owner, like, from Italy, Italian, like he had just been here for 20 or 30 years. He was an older gentleman. And every one of the managers was exactly the same, like real Italian human beings that had lived in Italy for a portion of their life and shipped over here, I think, just to manage the restaurant and give away free bottles of Chianti. And I think they all said trattoria.
Trattoria.
Yeah, that's what I always heard.
I mean, trattoria sounds cooler, but it's almost German.
Tomato,
like,
tomato. Yeah.
Trattoria.
Tour de France. France. Yeah. I don't know, but she has made me a little self-conscious about it. But I do like that aspect of it. I'm hosting in my house all the time. And
is that in your house? Do you do that in your house or do you do it in a studio?
No, no. I have a studio and we just got this new booth made, which is really cool.
Fun.
And I'm working on like getting all of the bad headshots and stuff behind us and all that part of it.
You got to work it out.
Yeah, but the breaking bread part, I mean, there is that thing that I'm always hosting and doing, and I'm always playing around with, like, do I feed them? Do I do this? Do I do that? But it's really, I think there's something very funny about the Italian grandparent thing of, during the podcast, it's hard because you don't want people chewing on mic that much.
Yeah, no, that's
people
the best.
Get very
that's
pissed off about that. But here's an espresso, and just in the middle of talking, just eat this.
Yeah,
eat this.
Have a bite.
Have this. Have more of this.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like that part to me is really fun.
I think it's very disarming. You know. Do you know Steve-O from Jackass?
I
know you know him. Okay, so Steve-O came on the show, and one of the things that he said, you know, he's had some very interesting conversations on his podcast. And I find that some of the folks you may not normally think would go talk to Steve-O, and they're disarmed by Steve-O. He's very, you know, he has a good conversation with him. And he says, you know, the key is, Brian, is that I have my dog there and I roll up in a van to their house and, you know, I host them inside the van. So they don't have to go anywhere. They don't have to do anything. And then I think the dog kind of disarms them. I think in a similar manner, you're breaking bread with them. You're offering them something. And then probably you're friends with almost, you know, a lot of these people. You've been around for a while. So I imagine you've done something with them at some point. It seemed like when we were listening to you with Donnell, it seems like you had, obviously you guys have known each other.
But it's an interesting thing. I mean, from the comedy part of, and you know, I'm trying to expand outside of it, but you know,
but the
comedy part of it is like Donnell and I know each other. We think we know each other even more than we do, just because we've seen each other around for so many years in the club. Like, we've never sat down and really talked like we did on that podcast ever. You know, we had maybe a 3-minute conversation at most, but we'd see each other and just liked each other and liked each other's acts. And knowing that you both come from that world and you've also been doing it the same amount of time, there's just this, it's like when you see a cousin, like when I would bring my kids to see their cousins, and they wouldn't have, they're little and they haven't seen these people ever or only a couple of times. When they get around family, there's something different, and they just
light up.
It's a different than seeing a friend. And it's that way with the comedians. It's like it doesn't even. We don't necessarily have to know each other, but we know we are part of that same family.
Well, I think there's too, like, a journeyman aspect, journey person aspect to comedy. And so a lot of there's shared trauma and experiences and joys and highs and lows, even though you may not have shared that with each other directly. It's kind of like there's a commonality. We've been through this. We've seen this. And, you know, Danelle's been around for a long time, too. And so you see each other in the clubs. And then when he has a chance, when you have a chance to take a breath and talk, there's these shared common experiences that you have, the highs and lows of being in the entertainment business. And being
definitely a shorthand.
Do you still enjoy the travel of the getting out? Now do you have two children?
I have two daughters, but they are now in college.
Oh, they're in college. Wow. Oh, I thought that they were younger for some reason. I thought they were younger.
No, they just left. Yeah.
Good. You want to swap?
Yeah.
How old?
Well, we often joke that I have 13 children, but every one of them is under the age of 5 years old. And And
such a long way to go.
I know. Yeah. And I think you and I might be of similar age. So just imagine.
I know.
I know. And ours are all just off to college too. And I'm like,
fuck
Brian.
You guys.
Yeah.
Fuck you guys.
Yeah. I know. It's such an intense experience for so many years.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm really kind of enjoying it, but I know it's a break also. Like I know, like my daughters are coming home for spring break next week, and it's like, all right,
here
the kitchen's going to be a disaster.
Yeah. Rooms,
laundry. Yeah, it's just going to be. Yeah, it's like. It's kind of a peaceful thing when they go for you.
Yeah.
It's like 20 years. I think we're allowed to enjoy it. I don't think we have to be pining and just like pretending that we're sad all the time.
Do they come home and are they like, hey, Dad, can I have $20?
$20. $20. Oh, please.
I'm trying
That's
to be nice.
Off easy.
Yeah.
No, they, assumptions.
No, it is now like a highly advanced digital
currency.
Like scan. Yeah. They like, they have access to all of my accounts through all of my apps, through all of my things.
Venmo, Cash App, Zelle, Bitcoin.
I went through the subscriptions that I'm paying for.
Oh, the subscriptions.
I'm like, what are we paying for? Okay, so I know we have Netflix and we know we have Hulu. Did we ever get Max? Yeah, we have three versions of Max.
Right.
We have Stars, we have Peacock, we have the Hallmark Channel, and like in different tiers.
Yeah,
and because they just see a show and they're like, "I'm going to watch this now," and I can press this on my phone and use my dad's account.
Yeah. Right, exactly. I mean,
hundreds of dollars.
Tom, let me tell you, even when they're five and under, my five-year-old has made more damaging charges on my card than I can tell you, because he knows how to work these systems almost better than I do. I walked in the other day and one of my kids is playing like this Hot Wheels game, you know, on the iPad. And here I come in there. Oh, cool. Hot Wheels, a game you drive and build your own truck. That's really cool. This morning I wake up and PayPal, $119, Hot Wheels app. And I'm like, you paid for the Hot Wheels app? And I go, there's a code on there. And he goes, yeah, it's 2217. And I'm like, you little rat.
I got more coins.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it wasn't Animal Farm. It was something like that.
Yeah, I think it was called Animal Farm. I do remember that.
Like, was
that
it an Animal Farm?
Game you played on the iPhone? Yeah.
And we paid for that. For years beyond when the kids, it was gone. We didn't even know. And then we took a look at it. And we're like, wait, and we couldn't find the password. Because my daughter at 5 years old, her password was unicorn fuzzy lamb chop 543.
Right.
And we had no record of it. And they would not let us cancel it. And we went back and forth for years. Yeah. I gave these people money.
I'm having a fight with one of them right now.
Yeah, it's
Are you?
Yeah. You know, I was like, you know, like everybody, my 20s, I went through this, like, you know, reflect inward, self-awareness, meditation, which I took a lot away from, but I got involved in buying one of those apps, you know, I don't know if it's a meditation app or one of these things. and they charged me whatever it was, $19.99 a month. About a year and a half ago, I realized that they're still charging me $19.99 a month. I'm sure I've changed debit cards like 15 times, right?
Yeah.
And they're still somehow charging my this same account. So I write them, and they say, no, that's not us. It's a similar app with a similar name. So then, you know how on PayPal they give you the phone number? You know, it says, hey, contact these people. So I Google the phone number. It's the same damn application company. So I write back and I say, no, it's not here. Look, it's this charge.
Oh, my God.
And they go, oh, well, you have to talk to this department. We'll give you their email
address. Did you meditate on it?
Yeah, I meditated on it. Yeah. And I said, I'm too old for this bullshit. When I didn't have kids, I could be a hippie. But now I'm done with it.
Yeah. No Zen. I don't have time for Zen.
I'm a militant hippie. That's what I am. I want to be a militant hippie.
It is ridiculous. I know.
Go ahead.
It's almost like you should just get rid of all of your credit cards and start new. It's the
fresh.
Only thing that's going to stop them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well,
I thought
I did.
They can't charge you.
I mean, I was 27 when I got this. What's that?
So they released at the limit.
Yeah, that's true.
The balance limit.
Eventually, most months they don't have enough money to charge. Maybe they're just charging me from when I didn't pay them a couple years ago.
Just max me out.
That's right. I wrote him. I said, please, I'm a podcaster. Do you understand?
I work for free.
I'm doing boner pill host reads just trying to make a living. They don't pay very good. And I have to use them in order to get a personal experience. Oh, it's a miserable life I live. Well, I want to go back. Like, I want to ask you a question because I do think we're all familiar with your work. And some of your work is, Chrissy and I were going over it before the interview. I mean, you were in The Informant, which is a brilliant movie, by the way. And you're so good in that movie, Behind the Candelabra. Mm-hmm. But I do remember seeing you first, maybe on Letterman, because I was a, you know, Deadhead Letterman watcher. Like, I loved it. I had to watch it every single night. And it seems like you were on almost every one of those late night television shows. I mean, you went through all of them, Conan, Letterman, Jay Leno. When you went, I just have a question like about the minutia of all of that. When you would go on those shows, were the experiences vastly different from show to show, depending on who the host was or who the crew was? Or did you have like a favorite, like was there one show was like, oh, this is so laid back. I enjoy these crowds. I enjoy these people. Or was it just kind of like, I'm so nervous about going out in front of 12 million people. I don't, you know.
They were pretty similar. You're pretty locked into what you do, and the crowds are always, you know, pretty great.
Pumped
there's
up.
A warm-up guy, and they're excited to be there and all of that stuff. And I mean, the rooms could be a little different. Like Conan's back in the day was like the audience was far up in the rafters.
Yeah.
There's nothing down low. And the Letterman, where Colbert is now, that Sullivan Theater, it was like Nirvana. It was just such a perfect atmosphere of like real theater seating. And the balcony even was like right on top of you. And it was only the structure of the room that changed because you were doing your thing your way. And and it's a great kind of an environment for sure.
Yeah.
It was, they were fun to do for sure.
Do you remember Eddie Brill from Letterman? He was like one of the guys who I guess coordinated talent. You remember, I don't know if you were ever on Clubhouse, which was a thing during the pandemic for 6.5 minutes. It was like
I never did that.
For 6.5 minutes, literally was the hottest thing on earth. And then it's just gone away. But I met Eddie on that app and he and we did some rooms together and some interviews together. And he would tell us about the minutiae behind the scenes at Letterman. And that kind of stuff was always fascinating to me. It's like how it all worked and how it all ticked. I think late night as in general seems like it might be going away. I mean, Kimmel's
ready to crazy.
Retire. It is.
It's definitely different.
There's still a thing I can see with young comics where they want to, you know, check off the Tonight Show. But it's crazy. The impact of it is just so different now. I mean, it's so like you can go on a great podcast or have your own podcast
Yeah.
or just have your own joke on TikTok and more people will see it than will see that late night show.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Which is so bizarre because it's still fun to do. Those shows are still great, but it's almost like the infrastructure even for doing those shows is so they can get content for social media.
For social media.
Right.
It's such a bizarre, I mean, it's so fun. You get to go in and you're in a dressing room and there's somebody cool on the show and this host is amazing and you walk out and the cameras and it's show business. It's like it's yeah. so great.
Glitzy and glamour.
But yeah. the impact that it has for your career is so diminished from what it was. And I could see it not being a goal for, I mean, I really truly don't think about it all that much.
Yeah.
You know, which is a shame because I really love the process of it. The great thing as a comedian is to get to do those 5-minute sets. It was like 20 minutes of material boiled down to this perfect set. So it always kept you sharp. It always kept you refining and writing. And it was a good thing that kept you really in shape and really diligent about your act. And that is kind of like, you know,
it's not the same. Yeah.
Now it's like, just how about do an hour special? And if you're lucky enough to be on the streamers, great. And if not, post it on YouTube yourself mm-hmm. and see if the audience likes it.
That's it. You can be self-produced in a lot of ways. We were talking yeah. to this young comic, Hannah Berner, the mm-hmm. other day, and she was explaining that, you know, the social media is the great equalizer when it comes to comedy now because, or, you know, maybe not in yeah. all cases, but in her case where she's putting out a lot of content, Netflix special and all this other stuff, she's like, I yeah. don't think without social media, I would have been able to go into some of these clubs at two in the morning in, you know, Jersey and, you know, mm-hmm. knock around sets because it's just a different vibe. But when I reach my audience directly with social media, then I can kind of engineer it backwards where now I can go into the clubs at midnight mm-hmm. and be opening for a headliner, and it feels different. She doesn't need the benefit of these late night shows. I think even Jon Stewart said one time when he retired the first time, he said, yeah. it's just different now. You know, Trevor Noah mm-hmm. went on to The Daily Show and killed it because he put those clips on social media, and the 1 and 2 minute clips are what people saw yeah. of The Daily Show. That's how they knew The Daily Show, not from watching The Daily Show, from right. the clips on social media. Do you engage? Do you find social media to be an interesting process for you? Or is it like, I'm doing it because I want to reach out to my audience and stay connected with them, but it's not my favorite part of comedy?
It took some time to get into to understand it, just because I was so from the old model of trained in the way of doing it. And so it took me a beat, but I do really enjoy it. Like, I really like... It's insane that you have a TV studio in your pocket.
Yeah.
You literally have a... Like, I can literally take my phone and put it on a stand and roll some... Need some bread, dough,
yeah.
in my kitchen and put it up, and 500,000 people get to watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's insane.
That is kind of crazy. Yeah.
If you don't, you know, in as a comedian, you don't get into this business to be anonymous. So
right.
the idea that you can do that is exciting. I think it takes a beat to learn how to do it your way. And I think you also, you know, with having your own studio in your pocket, you also need help. You also need people to cut down your clips and, yep. you know, narrate them or caption them and do all that other stuff. And I think now at this point, I've figured it out and have the right people in place to do it. And I like it. I mean, other than that, like, Trattoria lady, most people are nice.
Right, I was going to say, the personal interaction, listen, can be good and yeah, bad.
Which can be good yeah. and bad. And by the way, yeah. you said that nobody gets in this to be anonymous. Chrissy and I actually did this to become anonymous. It's working just great. I'll let you know that.
Well, good for you.
I can walk into any store. I'm not fearful that anybody's going to recognize it's me. But I have a face for radio, so.
Yeah. it's funny, like, I host Wait, Don't Tell Me yep. on NPR.
Yeah, I love that. Yep.
And I get to guest host it sometimes and also appear on it. And that has such a huge reach, that show. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how many places I'll be in and people don't recognize me. And then they hear me order my coffee and they're like, hey.
yeah.
It literally, the voice more than the face. It is a very strange thing.
It ticks it off. Yeah. I mean, that's a huge show, right? It
gets, I love that show. It must reach,
I don't know, whatever, millions and millions of people.
Yeah. One of the producers was saying the other day, or last time I guest hosted, was that when Jon Stewart came back to The Daily Show and they were talking about how great it was that their ratings were up to like 1.2 million or something. And they were all so excited that The Daily Show had got those numbers again. And that's half of what Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Wow.
That's insane.
Yeah.
But you can have a podcast and reach millions of people or millions of downloads too. I mean, it's just, you're right about it. It's like the RSS feed isn't technology agnostic. You put it out there and if people like it, they'll find you.
And that's,
I don't know. I think that every one of the people that we have interviewed comic wise in 2024, at least everyone has a podcast, and that's because it's just an extension of the brand. It's another place to practice. Mm-hmm. It's another place to get your voice out there. And like you said about having 500,000 people watch You Need Bread, you might go on, you know, I don't know, maybe you go on Jimmy Kimmel these days, right? And there might be 1.5 million people watching. But the difference is this: 1.5 million people, probably not every one of them, you're their brand. You're their flavor of comedy. Right?
Yeah.
But if you do 500,000 people watching your Instagram reel, it's likely most of those people are engaged in content that is similar, or they have directly said, I want to see Tom Papa's content, right? So it's like you're curating that audience and feeding them directly, as opposed to showing up on a late night show once every 3 months and saying, oh, there's Tom Papa. You know, I hope I like that guy.
Yeah. It's definitely more of a conversation. I mean, think about how bizarre it is even to like go through like the search on Instagram and you're seeing Anthony Hopkins or Robert De Niro, like these giants, like in their kitchen.
Yeah, right. they're doing meme videos.
The access, I mean, the access is kind of insane.
Yeah.
It's insane. Like if I was a kid, like I've got that George Carlin painting behind me. Like if I was back to when I was 16, discovering him.
Yeah.
And then I could be on my phone and see him talking to me and then hear him talk on podcasts. And I mean, all I had was
HBO specials.
Pop up on, a special. And then once in a while he'd do late night. And that was it.
Yeah.
And you just walked around waiting for the next time you got to hear something from George. And as a kid, I mean, it would be the coolest thing ever if I could digest all of that stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But it does also, I think,
take away some of the mystique.
A little bit of the mystique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like I love that my friend Matt Damon is not on it.
Yeah.
Like I like that.
Yeah.
I think it helps. I think when he does a film, people are excited to see him.
You're right.
Rather than see him, you know, at the beach or at the mall or in a game. And, you know, it's like it's nice to have, but that's different. I think movie stars is a different thing. I think at comics, it's like, I think the machine is built that you're supposed to be putting out funny stuff and there's all these places to do it. So you just got to constantly feed it. I think I don't think comedians really have much allure. I don't think.
Well, I think, you know, there certainly are comedians, I'm sure we could say, have had allure, like, right, you know, like Eddie Murphy back in the 80s, mm-hmm. George Carlin. Like, there was just this certain sheen about them. They were really good at what they do, but they weren't as accessible. And I think it does take away some of the mystique because it makes you realize as a fan just how everyday common your celebrity, whatever, you know, the person that you like is just like you doing the things that you do. But you're right about Carlin. Part of the reason why I think of George Carlin as kind of like a comedy god is because there's only so much we know about him, right? There's only so much that's out there. And I don't know what George Carlin was making for breakfast. I have no idea. I don't know what he thought of eggs and strudel down to the restaurant down the street. And I think
And he didn't even talk about his family. Like in his act, it was all issues. And I think that's why it lasted more than other comics. But we also left you wanting to know, wait, like when his daughter started her show and we got to hear it, like you were thirsty for it.
Yeah.
You wanted to know more about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's definitely it is an interesting time. But I think that I think for comedians specifically, it's just our job to create funny stuff and stuff that connects, and you should be constantly mining it and constantly developing it for the sake of creating it and developing it.
Yeah.
And how it gets sold and who, all that stuff is extra. I don't think you can go into any of these things, social media, the podcast, thinking I'm trying to get people. I think it's got to be, I am expressing this, I'm having fun with this, I'm putting mm-hmm. this out in the world.
Yeah.
I think in, that keeps you interested in making it, and then, you know, maybe people will show up.
I don't know if Chrissy feels the same way. We've talked about this, but I feel like the energy, I think we're best when we're not worried about who the next listener is, when mm-hmm. it's just kind of coming through us, right? When we're yeah. here creating. The energy is here. It's in the right now, and we're having fun with it, and it's two best friends just shitting around. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean you're not going to have lulls and be like, I just talked to her yesterday. Yeah. I'm tired.
Exactly. Chrissy says that's actually what she says every day when she comes in. She's like, I just saw her yesterday.
To, yeah. You know what would be really good? If you could download some kind of meditation app to your phone that you could listen to right before you did the show.
That's exactly right.
I'm paying for
one. I'm going to borrow your login.
Yeah, Brian. I wish I had my login.
You might as well use it. You're paying for it.
My next email should be not cancel my subscription, but can you get my login? Yeah, right. If you're not going to refund me, at least let me use the fucking app, for God's sake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is Carlin a huge influence on you? Is he one of your tops as far as comedy is concerned?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It was early, like before I was a comic, it was Eddie Murphy, it was Carlin, it was Cosby, Steve Martin.
Oh yeah.
You know, those were like the first ones that I really kind of, Richard Pryor, the first ones that, like, at that age when they were, I was just realizing that was a job.
Yeah.
That there are grown-ups doing this for a living.
It's like the Four Horsemen of 80s comedy right there.
Yeah, I know. It's just so huge.
Yeah.
But Carlin, I think,
70s, was, yeah.
I just think that over his career, just watching his integrity, he could be silly, but the integrity of trying to be great and trying to communicate was really, really inspiring. I think he was probably the top one.
He had a way of looking at the world and making it all make sense and knocking down hypocrisy at every turn, especially toward the end of his career, that I just think there's no one
so good at that
since who has been, at least in my opinion, who has been as rhythmic, as musical, as on top of it, as quick as Carlin was at his best, in my opinion.
Well, if you ever listen to interviews, he really treated stand-up with such reverence. Mm. He really, really was a student of the craft and wording and pacing and different types of jokes and how he would go about putting it all together. I mean, he really was a taskmaster. Like, that part of it, I gravitate towards the ones who are a little more written, who are like really kind of attack it that way. Like that's when I worked with Jerry Seinfeld for years, he's of that ilk.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And just to watch them like play with words and really just treat it with respect. Like, you put all this stuff into it and you get this great life back
Are you one of those, like, you know, a studier of the craft and you spend a lot of time, you know, kind of breaking down what other people are what other people that you admire are doing and how they're doing it and playing?
Yeah, no, I think that was the biggest, the thing that calmed me down the most as a young comic was learning that it was a craft that you could get better at, this wasn't this just vibe of, you know, you were all funny when you start. But then how do you harness mm-hmm. that into being a stand-up comedian for your life?
Yeah.
And that there was actually rules to it and you could actually craft it. And there was, that there was a working structure to it was really calmed me down and made me realize, I can do this in increments, and I will, as long as I keep doing it the right way, I should be getting better each year.
Is that because there was like, you found a method in the madness? Like, you know, you get out there at first and you're just like trying to find what's funny, but then you realize like, hey, there's like a math to this. There's a, science and an art to this, and I can
I think it's also finding examples of people that you could emulate because you work that way. Like I was starting in New York, there were guys that would just get up there and riff, and you know, Chappelle would go up and just be up there for an hour, and David Tell would be smoking cigarettes and look like he just came out of his apartment onto the stage, and it was like, I don't know if I'm that guy, but when I would hang out with like Colin Quinn and Jerry Seinfeld, and it was like, oh no, these are writers. And even Carlin said like he was a writer before he was a comedian, and like he considered himself a writer. Like then I was like, oh, okay. So that makes sense to me, that I could take my notebook to the diner and sit there every morning and go over my, like, more that made sense. Because I never look cool holding a cigarette.
I never did either, but I sure did enjoy it for a hot minute there.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, it seems like things turned out okay for you, Tom. I'm just sharing that with you. It seems like everything worked out.
No, maybe. It could all fall apart at any second.
I don't think so.
Riding the rail, though. I mean, that's what I say. I say, we're riding the rail, and it sure does feel fun while, you know, it's fun while it lasts, right? And I think,
yeah. I don't, it's funny, the thing I'm going through now is like, okay, I've been doing it for a long time, but I have barely a sense of that. Like, I truly, like, when I run into other people my age, like, that have, like, run businesses or, like, that, you know, they're politicians, you'll read stories, and it's like, I do not see myself as them. I still see myself as, like, the 25-year-old being like, right, guys?
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Like, the things I say, like, I don't.
Is that funny?
I don't think I've grown up yet. Yeah, I don't think I've grown up completely. Like, I have a family. I pay my bills. I do things. But there's another part of me that truly, truly feels like I just got here. And I'm like, is this going to work?
You know, what's funny is that Chrissy and I were having this conversation, is that I think we see you as kind of the opposite, like as one of the statesmen of comedy, one of the people who has made it, and one of the people who is consistently on their game. And so, but I know
it's
that
a facade. Yeah,
he's like, no, it's not true.
Yeah. I think the part of it, I don't know. I mean, it could be a mental deficiency, but it could also be if you're constantly making stuff, then you're always going to be a little vulnerable.
Yeah.
Like, if you're always trying to make stuff and feel like, will this be better than the last time? Does anybody like it? You always kind of have this feeling of uncertainty.
Sure.
You're never really on solid ground. So I think that makes you feel, it may not be youthful, but it makes you feel vulnerable. So as much as you can have things on your resume and all that, you still feel a little wobbly when you've got to take this new dumb idea that you have and think that it's important enough for all these people to listen to it and respond the way that you want them to.
Yeah, but you know, you don't want to become Fat Elvis, right? It's like you want that kind of uncertainty because I think that drives a little bit of ambition. Like if I felt like if I came in here and thought that I was the hottest podcaster since sliced bread, which I know I'm not, but coming in here with a little bit of humility and believing that, you know, not believing your own hype or not believe, you know, I don't know what it is. It's from Buddhism. And it says, don't believe the good news or the bad news, right? Don't believe the good news or the bad news. Yeah. None of it's real. And I think that that's a good like kind of mindset to have when you're creating is like, I think that's part of the ambition. It drives the hunger and it makes you want to be better. If you thought you were the shit, you would say, well, I got nothing left to do, right? I'm here. That's it. I'm Matt Damon. I don't need to do anything else. I'm Matt.
I'm the best.
No offense to Matt. Tom, I wish we could spend another 2 hours with you because you're such a good conversationalist.
I do have one more question. Please. What is your favorite bread? I'm a huge bread fan.
My favorite bread to make is, it's all sourdough based. It all comes from that method and using that starter as your yeast. My favorite bread is this olive loaf. It has like green olive and Kalamata olives, herbs de Provence, and lemon zest.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
Mushed into it. Yeah, that bread is like That one really.
That sounds incredible.
Yes.
Yeah.
I got to let you go because I have some Wonder Bread in the pantry.
I just made a whole batch of sourdough English muffins. So I'm trying sourdough recipes.
I've never done that, but people say that's very satisfying.
So good.
No, I wish you would bring those in here.
Sorry, I know.
What's going on?
We're eating them all at my house.
What's going on? I thought we were best friends.
Yeah. I thought you liked
me.
You
liked me.
Yeah. See, never believe in your own hype. It's not true. Tom, we will have you back because I'd like to finish this conversation. I'd like to debate cruising with you. That we didn't get to, but I'd like to debate cruising.
Yeah, the cruising.
Hot take.
I agree personally with you, Tom. Brian's a cruiser, though.
Well, listen, I also have 15 small children, and cruises are a great place to just huddle them all up. And what's the worst that can happen?
If you get killed by E. coli, you did your best.
At least I'm getting some sun, right? There you go. Tom Papa, he's on tour. He has a new book, multiple Netflix specials. He's done it all. And anytime you want to invite us to the Trattoria, we would be happy to
and we're
come.
Calling
I'll
it
see
it
you at the Trattoria.
Trattoria.
We're sticking with Trattoria.
We're sticking with the Trattoria.
They're wrong. We're right.
Yeah. Tom, thank you so much. We'll put all of the pertinence inside of the show notes, as we all do. Thank you, Tom. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Enjoy. I'll see you again.
Okay, bye. Thanks.
Trattoria.
Trattoria.
Trattoria. I don't even think those letters are in the word. Like, it makes no sense that it said trattoria. But of course, I'm going to be called out on this, and we're going to get hundreds of text messages of people telling me just how wrong I am. But I swear that those managers used to say trattoria. But anyway, Tom Papa was fantastic.
Oh my gosh. I've loved him for so long. I was a little starstruck.
I have to be honest. Yeah, I think I was.
But he was like so nice and disarming.
He was down to earth.
Totally.
He was disarming. He is one of the statesmen. I'm not going to say elder statesman because he's not that old, but he's like one of the statesmen of comedy. He's been through it. 30 years he's been doing comedy. He's been on every late night show under the sun. He's just.
Wrote for Saturday Night Live.
Wrote for SNL.
Worked with Seinfeld.
Didn't he do something with The Daily Show for a little while? I mean, the guy is great and he. Is constantly
what an honor.
Yeah, what an honor. And he's constantly on tour. And we would love it if you go to tompapa.com, get his new book, which is I'm sure great. I haven't read it, but I'm sure it's great.
I'm going to read it.
You are. You're a
I'm
reader.
A book reader.
Yeah, you have time to do that kind of stuff.
I do.
You read and let me know how it.
I will. I'll give you the cliff notes. Yeah,
I managed to get. I can't even believe I got that far in Reggie Watts' book. To be honest with you, I was like reading pages while my kids were taking a bath.
Yeah,
it was kind of insane.
Yeah, it's called "We Are All in This Together," so make some room.
Make some room.
Yes,
and he's a great bread maker, and I hope that he does.
Yeah, the cherry on top is that he makes wonderful bread.
Yeah, what
from scratch?
You know, I thought I heard him say you have to come to my show.
He did.
To get that. Brett, so can we come to your
that
show,
is the goal.
Tom, is the question that we forgot to ask you directly. But Chrissy pointed out long ago, when you ask them on air if they'll come back to your show, if you can be back on their show, of course they're going to say yes. They're not going to be a dick. I would be honest about it if someone asked me, you know, if I
we'll
was like
see.
A guest on their show. We'll see.
It's like, we'll see how like my go children. With your show.
Yeah, it's like parenting by distraction.
We'll see exactly.
It's like, okay, let's clean up your room and eat dinner, and then we'll talk about the Mickey Mouse watch, okay?
Exactly.
In hopes that you forget it. But of course, they don't because they're like little animals with cages in their brains. And they don't do it. And you know what I really enjoyed? I enjoyed when he was talking about George Carlin and, you know, being a student of comedy. I like that. I like that kind of talk.
Yes.
I know it may bore some of the audience, but I like it. I like talking like that.
I do too. And, you know, I mean, in this day and age now, everything's kind of instant. It happens quick and you can say some funny things and get traction going viral. But
can you sustain
from the school, from the old school? Which is tried and true, quite frankly.
I agree.
Yeah.
You hone your craft.
For the length of your career, you have to hone your craft.
Yeah, it's kind of like us. Like, we managed to be funny enough to get some listeners, but have we really done anything since then that has improved our craft? Probably not.
We got a new curtain.
We did. We
and
got a
we
new
did,
curtain.
Did our logo. We updated
this
that
is the
logo.
Third room we've been in. So there we go. We updated the logo. What else do you guys want from us? How much more can you ask from this stupid podcast? It's free. It's not like going to see Tom and you pay $70 for good seats.
Right.
You don't pay anything here. So don't complain if we're not students of the podcast craft, because I don't even know what that means.
I don't think there's a school.
Listen, we're two white people pretending to be funny. There's 1,000 of us out there. It's like we multiplied during the pandemic.
I know.
I like when he said that too. People ask me, is it a pandemic project? Not really. I actually thought of that on my own,
right,
without the help of the pandemic. Thanks very much. Tom was great, man. Tom was
fantastic.
Great. Tom goes on the list. I can't think of too many people we've had in 2024 that don't go on the list.
I know.
Of people
been so
we
good.
Didn't have enough time with. You know, sometimes, you know, just a little like pull the magic, the curtain back a little bit. And I'm sure it doesn't take a genius to figure this out. But we have a little bit of conversation, probably 2 or 3 minutes before we actually bring them on air. And so during the break. So when we do that, you know, we just say hello and we don't want to waste all
make
the good
sure
talking.
Technical stuff works.
Yeah, make sure that you guys can actually hear them. And so... Make sure we actually record the segment we're about to do so you can actually hear it.
Yep.
But when we were saying hello to Tom, I just I forgot what I was going to say. Yeah, there you go.
It just flows like water.
I am not a child.
I thought it was funny in the couple of minutes before we actually did the interview that he was trying to, you know, go full screen to see us.
Oh, yeah.
And so then he was able to, and he said, oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
if it was a bad, yeah, yeah. If it was a bad picture, I was going to, you know.
Minimize.
Yeah.
I think we should just go with a dark screen. You know how on Zoom you can just, like, right. That's a little tile that
just
has.
Say Brian and
yeah, it's your first initial, like B. Why need, why? Even if we put this on YouTube, people aren't there to see us. They don't care. Even on YouTube, our audio version gets so much more traffic than our video version. I'm just embarrassed. I'm like, people really don't like the way that I look.
It that way, though. It keeps the pressure down.
Yeah, it keeps the pressure down. That way we're not going to become famous. Like Tom said, we're not superstars. We're no Matt Damon's here. All right. Well, we want to thank Tom for coming on. TomPapa.com for all things Tom Papa. Tickets to his live events, his live shows. You can get the book straight from there.
I think we should send him a bottle of Chianti.
Chianti Classico. The Trattoria. Trattoria. What's that? Tremoria? Whatever that lady wanted to call it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's not a Tremoria. It's a Trattoria. It's a street cafe. I think that's what it means, like on the street. Trattoria means street.
Yes.
I think, right? In Italian? You're Italian.
I think
Italian.
So. I know. I've been to Italy.
And you've been to Italy?
I've been to Trattorias.
Yeah,
is that? I'm sticking with Trattoria.
It's your mother tongue. You don't know it? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Hey, listen, you know what? We're going to start a whole new segment here on the commercial break, then we would love you to be a part of it. Ask TCB Live. And I don't mean live like you'll be hearing it live. I mean live like you come on the show and we talk to you about it. We'll answer your questions. We'll give you life advice. We want to hear all about you, the average Joe, the regular listener, not like famous people like us and Tom Papa. I love how we compared. I like was comparing our podcasts and he's like, yeah, actually, I've been doing this for a lot longer than you have. He called me out. But anyway, we want you on the program and we're super excited about this new segment. So please do us a favor, dial us up 212-433-3TCB. That's 1-212-433-3TCB. Text us, tell us you're willing to come on the show, give us a little synopsis about what you want to discuss, and we will contact you for future communications. You can also drop us comments, questions, content ideas, and concerns right there to that same line, or leave us a voice message, and we may play it on air here on the commercial break. TCBpodcast.com. That's where you go. You find out more about the show. You can get all the audio and all the video from one location, TCBpodcast.com. Also, get your free piggy fronting sticker by hitting the contact us button. Drop down menu, I want my free sticker. Give us your address. We'll send it to you. No problem, no muss, no fuss. At the commercial break on Instagram, TCB Podcast on TikTok, and YouTube.com/thecommercialbreak for audio version, the RSS feed version. You can now listen to it on YouTube and the video version. We put all of our interviews up there. We love you to death. Thanks again to Tom Papa, TomPapa.com. Okay, Chrissy, I guess that's all I can do for today.
I think so.
But I'll tell you that I love you.
I love you.
Best to you.
Best to you.
And best to you out there in the podcast universe. Until next time, Chrissy and I will say, we do say, and we must say,
goodbye.